And welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody is doing well. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Doing better than the Detroit Pistons, who have the worst record in the league.
Yes.
And will pick fifth.
Yes. Not very good luck
in the NBA draft lottery. Which is why you shouldn't tank, idiots.
Especially in that sport.
Exactly.
And in hockey. It's just,
right.
It's total crapshoot at that point.
You tanked your way to the. It is amazing you could be the worst team and have the fifth pick, isn't it?
It really is.
But
it's not
that's
good luck.
Popovich
what's going
is
on.
Happy.
Does this mean Popovich stays around a little longer?
That made
for
me
a little
so,
Victor Dub?
Yeah, it made me so mad.
Wow.
And I know that like the Pistons are in the Eastern Conference and the Spurs are in the West, but I would have much rather seen number one pick go to the Pistons. I can't stand the Spurs. I think this dates back to some NBA Finals series between the Heat and Spurs where I just totally despised them, but I was upset to see the number one pick go to the San Antonio Spurs last night because apparently this kid is – now, I think people are getting maybe a little carried away saying that he's absolutely a better prospect than LeBron was. I'm like, I don't know about that, man. That's pretty good. But the best prospect certainly since LeBron, I think most people agree with that.
Yeah. I've also seen some people say the more hyped than LeBron. I mean, there's a completely different level of hyping someone now, right?
Yeah.
You can't get away from someone if they're – and I haven't been able to get away from Victor Dub. But I don't think that's even close to true in terms of – I mean, like LeBron in high school was
– otherworldly?
Yeah. Like, again, I think I said this before. Like, we almost drove down to Akron one time to just go watch him, my boss and I. Like, yeah, we got to go see this kid play. Like, from Michigan? Why?
Yeah.
I'm a high school kid?
Did you
in
go?
Ohio? No, we didn't go. But then not long after that, I watch him on the ESPN game they had with LeBron in high school. I was like, oh, yeah, he might be pretty good. But, yeah, this guy's going to be interesting. I'm always sketchy on the really, really skinny. Like, Chet Holmgren, you know, hopefully he's healthy. I'll be interested to see, and I know it's not the same level of prospect, how he does, but I worry about those really skinny guys. And then again, when Kevin Durant put up like three bench presses at the company, like, oh, he's going to get thrown around in the league, and he's been okay.
That was enough for the Trailblazers to take Greg Oden over Kevin Durant. Solid call there.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing, man. Like, Greg Oden, we can just go down this rabbit hole all day. Greg Oden could have been great.
He could have.
You know, terrible luck. What's that?
Miami Heat legend.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, well, the Spurs. I mean, at least they've been crappy for a while. At least they had to pay a little bit of a price here before rising back to the top.
Well, apparently this kid, Victor Wembanyama, is like a cross-pollination of Kevin Durant and LeBron James and like all these people. He's great.
Yeah.
He's a point guard that's 7'5 that could shoot is how he's described.
I think Durant is a good.
Yeah.
I mean, on the broadcast, they said he is the best prospect they've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if when he's standing, his standing reach, guys, close to 10 feet.
Well, Woj on ESPN before this took place last night called him the best prospect in the history of team sports.
Wow.
of team sports.
Okay,
Woj. Like, oh, okay.
That's, wow. That's saying
no pressure,
something.
Kid.
I mean, he does look to have the kind of volume shooting ability at 7'5". Because, I mean, that's the thing with Durant. No one can bother his shot, right? But you know, will he do it? I don't know. I still feel like he could be pushed around some. We'll see. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah.
San Antonio Spurs uniform.
I'm excited to see what the hype is all about. In game one last night of the Western Final, the Nuggets take down the Lakers 132-126 last night. Nikola Jokic with an outstanding performance last night once again in the playoffs, and he finishes with 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists. Another triple-double for Nikola Jokic.
It's decent. Decent night.
So the Nuggets up 1-0 in that series. And it was actually, I mean, the Nuggets were running away with it for a while. And then in the fourth quarter, the Lakers made things close. And Austin Reeves hit some big shots in the fourth quarter. He ended up 23 last night. But the Nuggets win on home court. And Darvin Ham of the Lakers says, we'll be fine after game one. So we'll see if the Lakers respond in game two. But game one tonight between the Heat and the Celtics, Joe Rex Road. I don't feel good about the Heat.
Yeah. Well, keep not feeling good about them. They keep proving you wrong. I mean, I hope we have two good series. I would like the Nuggets to win. I am rooting for the Nuggets. Well, frankly, I'd like the Nuggets and the Heat to win. I know that there's a lot of people who would love another Celtics-Lakers final. Probably some of those people reside in the NBA office, you know. But I'm rooting on both sides. I'm feeling pretty good about the Nuggets winning the series. That's been the Lakers' formula, is, you know, winning that game one on the road. I don't know about the Heat either. I don't know about the matchup. But, you know, hey, man, they've been way exceeding. I thought the Knicks were going to beat them.
I did not. I thought when they got the Bucks, I was not worried about the Knicks, but I'm very worried about the Celtics. So we'll see what happens there. Adam Silver last night, and we're going to get into this with Jeff Calkins a little bit later in the show on the Ja Morant situation. But Adam Silver, NBA commissioner last night, did speak on the Ja Morant situation, and you know he didn't come out and like outright say what the punishment was going to be for Ja Morant, but from his tone and from what he kind of was just open talking about last night with the first conversation with Ja Morant that he had, I think Ja Morant may be looking at a pretty lengthy suspension here. And Ja Morant, conveniently, after he heard, I would assume that he heard Adam Silver speak on national television last night, came out with a statement that says, quote, "I know I've disappointed a lot of people who have supported me. This is a journey, and I recognize there's more work to do. My words may not mean much right now, but I take full accountability for my actions. I've committed to continuing to work on myself." That was the statement that Ja Morant put out last night.
That took 3 days for that?
Took 3 days for that. And as Teresa Walker pointed out, that statement did not come until late at night last night after Adam Silver had already spoken in the middle of the Nuggets-Lakers game.
Like it took that? Oh yeah. Ooh, I'm boy. In some trouble. Interesting. Yeah, I think I think 20 plus is a fair expectation. I mean, I think he should get half the season. And I know some people think the whole season or whatever. I think the next few months how long was it between the two incidents?
About 2.5 months.
Yeah. Incredible. But, you know, it is a journey. I mean, I think that's the one thing about that statement that's, you know, that's accurate and it's fair to consider, but I think a lot of games are going to be part of this and should be.
Yep, we'll get into that more with Jeff Calkins at 7:30 from the Daily Memphian, who covers the Memphis Grizzlies. Get his thoughts on the Ja Morant situation. We'll have Paul Kaharsky from paulkaharsky.com joining the program at 8, so looking forward to that as well. Joe, we had a lot of discussion yesterday on the Nashville Predators front about the trade market and what that could look like, whether that's with the Toronto Maple Leafs. That was kind of the team that we zeroed in on yesterday, with their season coming to an end and some questions about their core four of Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, and William Nylander moving forward. And we talked about, could the Predators be interested in one of those players? And if so, would UC Saros have to be the trade piece that's involved there? And I threw that question out on Twitter after the show yesterday. And man, is there a wild degree of opinion on this matter of how valuable UC Saros is, whether or not the Predators should consider trading him. I think there are some out there that think that UC Saros should never be traded, even if Connor McDavid was up there one for one, and others were just completely quick to dismiss UC Saros, and there's, of course, everything in between there as well. A lot of people still think that UC Saros could fetch Leon Draisaitl back in a trade, which continues to mystify me. But though, the more you think about this, the more, if you're Barry Trotz, how do you approach how open they should be in terms of UC Saros and a trade piece? We've laid out the Askarov part of this. I think you and I would probably both agree he's probably not ready to play in the league next year, would be kind of the way I view it with Askarov right now. But that doesn't necessarily mean you can't make a move this summer. You do have Kevin Lankinen in under contract. How do you view that situation and the decisions that Barry Trotz now has in front of him as general manager?
Yeah. Clearly, some people overvalue like what Saros would bring back. Like you said, if you're talking Draisaitl, it's not going to happen. You know, a top player in the league, but a Nylander. I mean, again, Mike Zeisberg yesterday threw cold water on that immediately, but that was more about their need. Yeah, you have to be open to it, but you also have to be selective. Of course, it's really interesting because a lot of people have made the point. I think you made the point, and others too. You know, you can win a cup without a great goaltender. Now, you also have seen a lot of great goaltenders win cups. So it's almost like this particular playoff. I mean, I know that these general managers are smarter than this, you know, but it's like this particular playoff is not a great one to precede a summer where you, if you're trying to trade a goalie, you know, like you could use like the Rangers winning the cup this year. Be like, yep. See, this is what you need. But everybody knows that, and especially the way the game is right at this moment, you got to have the elite forwards. You know, that's where you start. That's where goalie and quarterback really, it's always a comparison, but it really, in a lot of ways, is not applicable. It doesn't really work. But I still think the right situation in Toronto, I still feel like, again, maybe they like the kid, like Zeisberger said, and so, okay, we'll see. But a proven, excellent goaltender for some teams, if it's the final piece, seems like you could get something good back.
Well, you can't tell me. And look, at the end of the day, let's say a Nylander or a Marner or whoever's available, there will be heavy interest in those players, and there will be more teams than just the Predators that will make calls on that, I'm sure. But you can't tell me that whether it's Kyle Dubas or whoever's going to be the general manager in Toronto, they don't stop to at least consider UC Saros. Like, they may not do it, but that would be a heavy discussion point, I am confident of, in Toronto, of, oh, UC Saros, he's pretty good. Like, maybe we ought to consider that part of it.
Right. Like, he laid out why the D-Core is the biggest area, you know, of need. But if you have a really good goaltender, sometimes it can make those guys look better too, you know?
Well, and what I've kind of gone back and forth with, and look, I need to make myself clear, I'm not necessarily even saying that the Predators should trade UC Saros, but I am presenting evidence to the other side of, at some point, there's a decision to be made, whether it's Saros or Askarov of who you're going with. Now, I heard from some people yesterday that said, why in the world would they go with Askarov when they know what Saros is? Like, Saros is a proven NHL commodity. He's one of the top three goalies in the world, I think, he's been the Vezina conversation 3 years in a row. Find me another goalie that's done that. Like, it's what he is. He's a top three goalie in the world. How much better do you think Yaroslav Askarov is going to be than what we already know UC Saros is? And that's a fair question. Like, that's a good point. My answer is, like, if you wanted to go cheaper moving forward at goalie with the Predators, that's what you would do. Like, UC Saros' contract is up in 2 years. Vasilevsky's making $9.5 million right now. Connor Hellebuck's about to get a new deal, and he could end up making around $9.5 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. Like, by the time Saros' deal is up, he's going to be commanding $9.5 million, somewhere in that neighborhood of a salary per year. So the reason that you wouldn't do it would be, okay, well, that's a whole lot of money to be paying a goaltender and trying to field the team around the goalie at that point. So it's a very complicated decision that the Predators have coming up. And really the question is, how much do you value the goalie? How important is the elite goalie to building a championship roster in today's NHL? We'll continue that discussion coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. More on UC Saros, the Predators, and the trade market coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superlook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts on the Nashville Predators, the trade market this summer, and whether or not UC Saros could be used as a trade chip for the Predators. And a lot of this discussion, Joe, I think comes down to a couple of things. Number one, the decision at some point that Barry Trotz and the Predators have of, all right, is it going to be UC Saros that your future is with in goaltending, or is it going to be Yaroslav Askarov, who you spent a first-round pick on, who is your future in goaltending? And when does that decision need to be made? But also, like, how important is the elite goalie? Everybody wants one, so let's just go ahead and make that clear. Everybody, if given the choice, would rather have an elite goalie. Everybody's always looking to find the elite goalie. So I don't think anybody denies that in this discussion. But my question is, like, how important is that to the bottom line of winning a championship? Like, a lot of people will point to Edmonton, right? They've got Connor McDavid. They've got Leon Draisaitl. McDavid is the best player in the world. I don't think that's arguable. Leon Draisaitl is probably anywhere from the second best player in the world to like the fifth best player in the world, somewhere in that neighborhood, depending on, you know, your definition and Nathan MacKinnon and some other guys. But they've not even gotten to a cup final yet, and they just got put out in the second round this year. And a big reason, honestly, why they just got put out in the second round is their goaltending was atrocious in Stuart Skinner. So, obviously, goaltending is important in the playoffs. But you go back through teams that have won a cup and think about the Chicago dynasty. They won their first one with Antti Raanta in goal, who is not, by any stretch of the imagination, an elite goaltender. Corey Crawford was very good. I don't know that I would call him elite, but Corey Crawford was very good. The Pittsburgh Penguins have won three Stanley Cups with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. In two of those years, they won with Matt Murray as the starting goaltender in the playoffs.
They had the Flower and him, yep. And they were trading. Right.
Right, and Fleury won the first one, and he was great. And Fleury played important roles in both 16 and 17 in the playoff run, and he got in there for a stretch. But Matt Murray was the guy that was in goal and won the cup and played well for Pittsburgh. But you have Crosby, you have Malkin on Chicago, you have Kane, you have Taze, and even Tampa, right? Like, I still believe that Andrei Vasilevsky is the best goalie in the world, and they won two cups in a row with Andrei Vasilevsky. So, obviously, they've got him. But they also had Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos, who I would classify as three elite forwards. And they had arguably the best defenseman in the world in Victor Hedman. So Tampa's kind of a case where they got everything that played together.
Yeah, but to me, they still count. I mean, they still count on that side of the category, right? I mean, it's a team with an elite goaltender that won it. I mean,
sure.
There may be some moments in there where if you have an average goaltender, you know, you lose a close game that changes your run. Jonathan Quick is the other one.
Certainly.
Right? I mean, so in the last decade, there's four titles that I would say, certainly you would say they have elite goal. The funny thing is the Blues got elite goaltending in 2019.
By someone who is not an elite goal.
Right.
Yes.
So sometimes that happens too. So it's still the goaltending itself is great, but it's just the goaltender isn't consistently that.
Right. Now, the other thing I would say is, yes, Andrei Vasilevsky certainly counts as an elite goaltender winning a cup, but so does Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov,
sure.
Steven Stamkos. So it all goes back to, like, at some point,
you got to have a great team.
You got to have some of those guys at forward. And look, no disrespect to Philip Forsberg or Matt Duchene and the seasons they had a couple years ago. And the Predators have had some really good forwards that have come through here. They've never had that guy, ever. Like, they, you know, Paul Kariya is probably the closest one, and even him was at, you know, the latter stages of his career when he was here with the Predators. He played great, had two, you know, really good seasons here in Nashville. He's a Hall of Famer. But the Predators have never had the upper crust elite forward in the history of their team. And, you know, I was laying it out the other day, and this was more of an exercise to, you know, try to explain, like, what Vegas has done. This is their fourth conference final since 2017. And I just counted up the Western Conference teams who have been to the conference final, like how many times they've been to the conference final since the Predators came in. And it was like Arizona, Calgary, the Predators, Winnipeg, and a couple other teams, Vancouver's thrown in there. They've only been one time since 1998 to the third round, one time. So I'm not saying that that's 100% why. But the Predators, the fact is, have been past the second round of the playoffs one time in the history of their franchise, and they've never had one of these elite forwards. So how do you get one?
Okay, so if you, let's say the trade that we were talking about yesterday, if you got Nylander, does that mean you now have one?
Well,
not automatically slam dunk. I mean, you've had, you know, 40 goal scorers here.
You have. Nylander, and some people disagree with me on this, which is fine. I'd probably stay away from him if I were the Predators. That's just me. I like the offensive ability, obviously. He seems like a prime candidate to me that when he's away from the Marners and the Matthews and the Tavareses of the world, that production's going to slip.
Suffer.
And, you know, he'd still be a good player, but if you're getting him, you need him to be great. Like, if they got Marner, Marner's the type of guy that I feel like he's going to put up his numbers and it doesn't matter where he is. I mean, the kid's really, really good. So if I'm targeting one, first off, I would target Matthews. I have no belief whatsoever that Toronto is going to let Matthews walk out the door. I really don't feel that way about Marner either, but I think Marner would be more realistic than Matthews would be, just based on, I think Matthews is the type of guy that he plays down the middle and he's an elite player and you build around that. So Marner would be my choice if I were the Predators targeting somebody. I would probably stay away from Nylander, but that's just me.
Yeah, it makes sense. The Preds, by the way, you know, their Stanley Cup final run, I mean, we would attribute that to, we'd start with the goaltender, right?
We would.
We'd start with Pecorine. Now, incredible decor, the best decor in the league back then. And they had, you know, one of those runs where, you know, Zolnarczyk is scoring big goals. I mean, you know, but
Brett Fiedler.
Exactly. I mean, Cody
McLeod.
My goodness, thank you. Huge goal against the St. Louis Blues. Yeah, but that was a goalie run. It's funny, you go through time. I think about my childhood team. They won cups without elite goaltending.
Yep.
But then they would not have won a couple later without having arguably, or, you know, one of the top couple of goaltenders in the history of the game in net. So you can do it both. I mean, it's hugely important, but it's not. I think the one thing is with all of these teams that have won it, there's been great players scoring the puck.
Yeah. I mean, the real answer is if you could build the team, it would be like, well, let's do it how Tampa Bay did it, where you've got the elite goalie and you've got three elite forwards and you have maybe the best defenseman in the world. You'd sign up for that every time.
Right.
I think we would all agree that that is the formula to win. Now, that's a really hard one to duplicate, is what the Lightning have done.
But everybody, I think, if truth serum, all GMs in the league would say, okay, given the choice, you have the elite goaltender and you're kind of at forward, or you have elite forwards and you're so-so at goaltender, they're all going to take the forwards.
I think most of them probably would. Caleb on Twitter, Michelle just sent us this, says, I think trading for Saros is for the Preds is out of the question, only because they have had success building around a goalie and defense, so they know they can win that way, just like the Titans have had success building around Derrick Henry. And I hear that, and to your point, in 2017, Pecorine played great. They got to the Cup Final, and that was great. And they built around defense, and to Caleb's point, the Predators have been a team for 25 years who have built their team around goaltending and defense. And I'm not saying there's necessarily anything wrong with that. But again, they've been past the second round of the playoffs one time in 25 years. Well, so are they really winning that way?
But another thing is that whole comment assumes that, but they're just trading away a goalie and not caring about goaltending. They have a goalie prospect coming.
That's the other thing.
I mean, to me, you know, you're right that Saros is going to get a bigger deal. But when he's up, he's going to be 30, right?
I think he'll be 29.
Will he be 29? Yeah. I think he's 28 now. Okay, so he'll be 20. But regardless, like he'll get a big number, but he probably won't get a long deal. I don't know. It'll be really interesting if he's still elite until then. Like the timing may not be exactly perfect for him here, in terms of. But regardless, you're talking about potentially a great goaltender who's younger and cheaper, and then you have a bigger window with him. I mean, that to me is why Saros makes more sense to trade. Maybe somebody out there is so desperate for Askarov, you can get a bigger haul, maybe?
See, I don't think there's any chance of that. I had somebody ask me about that yesterday. Like, don't you think Askarov might get a bigger haul than Saros? I don't. I mean, Saros, for the reasons that you would keep him, because he's the proven product, like Saros, especially now with what he's getting paid.
That's the thing, though. Yeah, right. Like, the number is really good right now for what he gives you. He's a huge value.
I think he would get a lot back. Now, I'm not saying you couldn't get a good amount back for Askarov, because I think you probably could. But there's a difference between somebody who is a proven commodity in the NHL and somebody that's, you know, I know he played
still
one game
prospect
last year, but it's really never played in the league. Like, it's just viewed differently by teams. And if you're a team that's acquiring UC Saros, my assumption is you're doing it because you want to win right now.
You're winning now. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like if Askarov is – yeah, that's the thing. Once he's really early in his tenure, that means you've probably chosen him. So it's probably Saros.
615-737-1025. We'll get to more of your thoughts on this on the text line coming up next. Also, a topic that we discussed with the Tennessee Titans yesterday about their investment level in running backs led to a very interesting discussion. We'll bring that back up coming up in the next segment as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson, Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they are referred to so often. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joel on the text line says, Jared thinks if you fire the coach, regardless of who you happen to hire, you'll at least get to a conference final. Hashtag Stillman Logic. Chip from Mount Juliet says, spot on. The Preds have had elite goalie play for years, but not much else. Saros could be dangled for a superstar, have Askarov in hand. It could be interesting. The elite goalie and defensive mindset hasn't gotten them a cup. And Al from Smyrna says, Preds have only been past the first round 5 times. This is from Al from Smyrna on the text line. Very different opinions on this matter.
So I just I do feel like sometimes with things like this, it gets a little bit – does it get a little bit exaggerated? Did Jared actually say that?
He did make the point of Vegas fired their coach last year. They're in the conference final. Dallas fired their coach last year. They're in the conference final. Florida fired their coach last year. They're in the conference final.
There you go. So causation.
He did say that.
So that's all it takes.
It is 3 or 4.
Fire John Hines. Install, you know, a bag of pucks. Prosper.
Maybe the way to go. Trey on the text line says, do you see a situation developing in the future where Askarov and Saros become the new Pekka Saros 1A, 1B tandem? The age gap is roughly the same, and it paid dividends to why Juice is as good as he is now.
Yeah.
I do not see that scenario. I think that would be a gigantic mistake.
Yeah. I just think that you're wasting an asset there, you know? Like, you just – to me, like, you have such other needs, and if you're really strong in one area, which, again, we think they're going to be because we think Askarov is going to be that level of player, then I just, to me, like, having two, I don't know what Askarov will be, but if he's going to be, like, a Vezina candidate at some point and a top 10, I mean, you would safely, even for people around the league, you would safely put Saros where? Right now, I mean, I think top 5, but I think safely top 7. Like anybody in the league would say, right?
He's top 5. I don't think it's arguable that he's top 5.
So if, and we don't know this, but if Askarov is that level of player, to me, that's you're wasting assets. So one of those guys is going to start 25, you know, 30 games in a year. One of those guys should be a starting and star goaltender for someone, and you should have assets as a result of it. You know, that's how I look at it.
Well, and also, I would like to, like, the age gap is not the same between Pekka and Saros and then Saros and Askarov. When, you know, Pekka in 2017, when the Predators got to the Cup final, he was 34 years old. Right. Saros was 21. That's a 13-year gap. Saros right now is 28, and Askarov is 20. So it's different. And the timing of it's different. Like, if, you know, Saros can – I think Saros can play in the league and be a pretty good player for another 7, 8, 9 years. I mean, it just – it's a different situation than when Pekka and Saros were together. And like you said, I think it would be mishandling the assets if that's the way you went with that.
And again, like we've been talking about, they did get to one cup final with, you know, with that
they did
situation, but – it's maybe a little bit of a different – it's an opportunity to have, you know, to turn one of them into possibly a great four. But that's the thing. It's like, what is actually the market, you know, right now?
Well, and the other question is, what level of forward? Like, who would you be willing to trade UC Saros for? Because I had somebody yesterday that texted me, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but I understand with what they were coming from, that said – I know that you wouldn't get a Leon Draisaitl for UC Saros, but I also probably wouldn't trade UC Saros unless it was for a Leon Draisaitl type of forward.
Yeah, you can't think. I totally disagree with that.
I do too. You know, I agree with the standpoint of I probably wouldn't trade him unless it was for an elite forward. But then it gets into, all right, well, who's elite?
What does that mean?
Yeah, like Draisaitl is elite of elite.
Right. Yeah, Draisaitl is –
top five player in the world.
Player for sure, right?
Yeah.
It's just not happening. Nylander is a great – I mean, maybe you've hit the fault line. It's like Marner, yes, yes, and Nylander, not quite, and it's the line between them, you know, two guys on the same team. But it's in that range that is possibly realistic.
I'm throwing this name out because it's an example of the type of player that – I would certainly pull the trigger on. By no means do I think this is a realistic option for the Predators, but like a Braden Point type of guy, I would trade UC Saros for that. Some people would, some people wouldn't. Like Braden Point is not Leon Draisaitl, But Braden Point is an elite forward.
See, the funny thing is when you bring up a Braden Point, and it's like, think about what Zeisberg was saying yesterday. He's like, boy, these guys every year looks good on the back of a hockey card. You know, I tell you what. And the thing about a Braden Point is, talk about a dude who does his best work in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is what matters. Now, you could always look at him and also say, yeah, well, it's great to have this guy as your teammate. But the bottom line is, he actually performs in the clutch and has huge moments, and those guys have come up woefully short.
Way short. Now, you know, in Point 2 this year, he scored 51 in the regular season. And like I said,
so he's doing it in all.
Like I said, that's not an option. Like the Lightning are not trading him. But I'm just saying, like, just because it's not Leon Draisaitl doesn't mean it's not an elite forward, is the point I'm trying to drive home there.
Right.
So it's a really interesting decision that the Predators are at. Now, look, as we sit here today on May 17th, I would be pretty surprised if UC Saros is not back next year and is not the starting goaltender for the Predators, and they move into next year with that. You know, we can talk about trades. And look, Barry Trotz has talked about it. They have assets now that when trade proposals get brought up and players become available, I think it would be a mistake not to at least consider the Predators to be a part of that. Like, Barry Trotz has assets at his disposal now. Or you could try to attack that if that's the way you wanted to go. It's up to him to determine who's the right player, is this the right time, all of those things. But I think the most likely scenario is UC Saros is back next year, and he's the starting goalie for the Predators, and they try to approach things that way. But I stand by what I said yesterday, Joe, and that is by about this time next year, I think you're going to have to make a decision on that if you're Trotz. Because, you know, look, I'm not a goalie evaluator. They have a way better idea of how ready Askarov is than I do. But my guess is, after next year, if he spends another year in Milwaukee, which I think will be the plan, he's probably going to be ready after that, just based on what I've seen from him. I think that Askarov could be ready after next season is done. So, to me, by the time next year rolls around, and you have another year of UC Saros, you have another year of Askarov developing in Milwaukee, which is the most likely scenario to me, I think this decision is coming for the Predators next year. And then there's the other part of that, which is Saros will be entering the final year of his deal at that point.
Right, which I suppose, I guess different teams could look at that differently. But, okay, let's say Askarov is just freakishly good next year.
Yep.
To the point where it's like, yeah, this guy, like, he should almost be in the league as a backup now. But I'm trying to think of a scenario where, like, their values get close to each other.
I mean, he'd have to be really good in the minors. I mean, just, and I'm not saying he can't do that, but
man,
he checks all the boxes. He's got the size, he's got the athleticism, he's got the pedigree, all those things. I hear you. Like, I think there's good value there to me. Just trying to view it as an NHL general manager, I always think the value is there from what you know is the proven commodity rather than potential. Now, you know, ask me about Connor Bedard before he plays a game in the NHL, then maybe it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Somebody yesterday was like, well, they should parlay UC Saros into Chicago's number one pick.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't think Blackhawks going to do that.
Chicago will jump all over that. Chicago will also ask for, like, every bar on Broadway.
Yes.
And the Titans. Another question there is obviously with Saros right now, value high. What if, you know, what if it's kind of like a rough rebuilding season and the numbers aren't as good for him and, you know, you have maybe a little bit diminished. He's a year older. He's got a year left. The value's diminished. That's why I think this summer, if you can find something, you jump on it.
Well, the value will be diminished no matter what happens next year. And the reason I say that is because, number one, his age right now, he's 28. But number two, the affordability of his contract, not only for next season but the season after, the value will never be higher for UC Saros than it is right now heading into the offseason. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to trade him right now, but I do think the value will never be higher for him than it is now this offseason. So that's up to Barry Trotz. Is that the time to strike? Do you value – I mean, we know Barry Trotz also values goaltending a lot, so he may have no interest whatsoever in trading UC Saros. That's the decision that he's going to have to make.
Just load up those goaltenders. It's like Titans. Just get all the quarterbacks.
Yeah. Bring them all in. Can't wait until 2028 when Malik Willis is backing up Will Levis, and they've got all these packages in for him. It's going
to
be great.
Oh, man. Why do we have to wait that long?
Speaking of the Tennessee Titans, we will get into them coming up next. Had a very intriguing topic that a listener brought up yesterday in terms of running backs, the value the Titans place on that position, and do the Titans place way more value on running backs historically than any other team in the NFL? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. 102.5, 106.3, The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Friday, May 26th, courtesy of Green Trees Company Dispensary, providing high-quality legal THC products. Just text in the keyword TREES, that's T-R-E-E-Z, with a Z instead of an S, so T-R-E-E-Z, now to the game text line at 615-737-1025. Once again, 615-737-1025 on our text line for your chance to be entered to win. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. And, Joe, a listener brought up an interesting kind of discussion point yesterday. We were talking about Derrick Henry and the running back position and, you know, the Titans, what they're going to do with that moving forward. But also the conversation of how the offense has been built and things that we've talked about a lot here on the show came up. And a listener basically threw it out there. Do the Titans value the running back position more than anybody else in the league? And basically, is that a mistake? Do the Titans put too much emphasis on the running back position? And we went through it yesterday. Obviously, they've had Eddie George in their time here in Tennessee. They've had Chris Johnson come in, who they spent a first-round pick on. Derrick Henry, who they spent a second-round pick on, who they've given lots of money to, and who's been a very good player for them over the course of his career here in Nashville as well. Certainly, they've had very good backs from George to Johnson to now Derrick Henry, probably the best of the three. But is that a sign of maybe the Titans placing too much value on the running back position and maybe not enough value elsewhere on the offensive side of the football? And one of the questions we asked was, how much more value have the Titans placed on the running back position than other teams around the league? Have the Titans placed more value on the running back position than other teams around the league? So what do you make of kind of this discussion point that was brought up yesterday on our program?
Yeah, well, I just said, you know, there's a lot. Look, I mean, I can't sit here and pick through all these offenses over the years and things like that. But first of all, the triggering aspect of this, which I think is easily argued, is just like, that the Titans have decided, you know, like this is like they decided that they are going to be focused on running backs over a period of time, and that's what we're seeing now. They just decided to be focused on Derrick Henry and a running back, and so that's why they're bad. You know, that's the predicament they're in. And, I mean, anybody who pays attention to this team obviously should know that that's not true, right? I mean, this is how things have kind of evolved, and they had a great player, and they featured the great player because he's a great player. I mean, I think it's that simple. It's that simple to me. I understand why that people have like struggled to watch this offense, and you know, like last year was hard. Even though Derrick Henry had 1,500 yards, like 75% of his carries were hard to watch because it was just like slamming into a wall. You know, I mean, good for him for getting 1,500 yards. But I just had this thought of, well, I'm going to go – and look, this is arbitrary. So you go and you try to come up with something that you can look up to have any kind of indication. It's just kind of – to me, it's just sort of fun to look at this stuff. I just went back through the 2000s and went with first-round running back picks. Now I understand that's not perfect, okay? That's not a perfect representation. But to me – if you are a franchise that cares a lot about that position, then you're going to draft some, in the first round. I also argue, you could also argue that anybody who's doing a ton of that in the 21st century, you know, might have problems, you know. But so I went through all that, and what I found is, of course, the Titans. Then they have there's one name. It's Chris Johnson.
Yep,
we talked about that yesterday. 24. And they are now, there are some teams that have done none of that. Okay. But, there are several teams that don't just have two running backs picked that high in the 2000s. They have three, which I found a little bit surprising. And I know you'll be surprised by this. One of those franchises, the mighty, mighty Detroit Lions.
Yes. Yes. Who just added to that list.
They did. They just made it three with Jahmyr Gibbs. Now they go back to another thing with this is like a lot of these picks are early. Like there just aren't that many, you know, in recent years. But you do have your Barkley number 2 and 18. I mean, you have your super high pick here and there, but
Leonard
it's gotten so – yeah, Leonard Fournette, number 4 in 2017. Jags have 2, by the way. ATN gave them 2.
Yep.
The Lions were Kevin Jones.
Kevin Jones. Who, I forgot about that.
Virginia Tech, baby. Could have been good. Javid Best also could have been good. The amazing thing when you go through these running back lists is like how many – oh, man, he could have been good, and yet injuries – you know, ended up being a big part. I mean, how about – I mean, the Patriots have done more drafting of running backs in the first round. That to me, would be the first thing. Oh, they don't do that stuff. Well, they drafted Lawrence Maroney, number 12, back in 06, and then they drafted Sony Michel, number 31,
yep,
in 2018. So even the Patriots have taken a crack at it twice. I'm trying to think. No one had 4, to the credit of the league, I guess. The Saints had 3. The Steelers had none until they took Najee Harris. Now that was 24, but that's a recent one at least. You know, a recent attempt. To draft a running back. Like I said, the Panthers were D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, Christian McCaffrey. That's not bad. I mean, that's three good players. Giants, Saquon Barkley. Before that, it was Ron Dane and David Wilson were their first round picks.
Oh yeah.
The other teams with 3, you know, Cardinals had, I thought the Bengals had 3. Did the Bengals have 3? No, how about the Chargers? You wouldn't think of the Chargers necessarily either. Ryan Matthews.
Yep.
Melvin Gordon, and of course LT worked out pretty well. Chiefs, Larry Johnson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You go from 03 to 2020. Again, I know that this is an imperfect way to look at it because it's just first round draft picks, but like the position itself. I mean, again, Derrick Henry, a second-round pick, that's still a prominent pick, but Derrick Henry wasn't drafted with the idea that, you know, he's going to be the absolute focal point of the offense pushing a decade from now, just how things happened.
Right, and look, I mean, the other part of this is obviously the investment level in the running back financially after that. So you've got, you know, look, Ezekiel Elliott got a big contract, Christian McCaffrey got a big contract. Remember the David Johnson contract? David Johnson got a big contract.
Yep.
But, I mean, the Titans do have 2 on that list, and Derrick Henry and Chris Johnson. But I said this yesterday. They also paid those guys after they were absolute dominant forces. So that's a result of picks working out, being good, and then you responding to the information that you have at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it was preordained. Derrick Henry was, to some extent, in 2018, in Vrabel's first year on the trading block.
Yeah.
So it's just how things work out, you know. So they happen to have 2 guys who, in, you know, again, totally different offenses, different coaching staffs, different situations, but they had to happen to have 2 guys who ran for 2,000 yards. I mean, the franchise itself, you want to go back to Earl Campbell, it's a tremendous running back history, but I just wouldn't. I mean, it's kind of like the receiver discussion. Like, man, they can never pick a good receiver. Like, well, it's different people picking.
Right.
And they did pick A.J. Brown.
They did.
And then they traded him.
But they
did pick him.
Sent him packing. And another wide receiver they picked is Treylon Burks. And he spoke to the media yesterday. We'll take your thoughts on this, the running back discussion that we've thrown out there. We'll get into what Treylon Burks and other Titans veterans had to say yesterday to the media as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.